Okay. I'm live with Justin Barrett. Thank you so much. You're someone that I talked to a while ago. We were supposed to talk a while ago. I just get a busy schedule, and obviously talking to nationalists, I got to be I don't want the show to turn into like a nationalist show, so I have to kind of space you guys out. You are an Irish nationalist.
That is correct, yes. And thank you very much for having me on your program, Jake. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, no, thank you. And it's like, I had a problem of not a lot of guys will talk to nationalists or white people. So I did a couple, and then I just got flooded of, not by you, but people recommending you, recommending other people, because I realized, oh, no one will talk to these people, which is, to me, it's insane that people won't talk to nationalists. And was I noticed talking to them, at least the guys I talked to, they actually weren't hateful. They did make a lot of sense. Some of my views did change a little bit. I'm like, oh, that's why they want to like silence people like you. Because when you hear, I haven't talked to you yet, but the guys I've talked to, they make you think like, oh, every white country is being eliminated. I knew it was kind of happening, but I didn't realize how extreme it was until talking to people I wasn't supposed to talk to. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you see, if the average nationalist spokesperson were to live up to the stereotype that is American History X presented, yeah. Or maybe if you're old enough to remember the Australian version, yeah. Romper Stomper way back in the day, is that we'd be allowed on everything. That wouldn't be a problem because that tone, that vitriol, that overall presentation was something they knew was unattractive to decent people. I won't say middle of the road people, because I'm not pretending I'm middle of the road and I'm not trying to be middle of the road, but just decent, ordinary people. And that could be put on. That was they would have, like, you know, in the 80s they would have members of the Ku Klux Klan, and I'm not saying every Klan group is crazy either, but they would have crazy members of Klan groups and whatever, and they'd come on the mainstream TV shows and whatever, and they'd say crazy things, and that was fine. And then a generation was coming along that was just talking common sense. I'm talking common sense with a racial angle to it, but not with a race hatred angle, but a racial conscious understanding, and placing that into an overall context of a world view as to how things should be in a given country. Now, at first, that was the United States, because a lot of cultural phenomena nowadays do begin in the United States by definition of the Anglosphere cultural dominance. Mm-hmm. But as that spread out across the rest of white Europe and Australia and so on and so forth, is they found that there were an awful lot of characters that were not caricatures. And caricatures that are not caricatures are of no use to them to have on TV, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I know this particularly because I can remember self-censoring way back, because I've been at this politics for a long time. I started out in conservative politics. Now, when I say conservative, I was pushing the edge of the envelope on the right, but it was still, strictly speaking, conservative politics. And although I would have been regarded as an extremist in the Irish context, I nonetheless was on TV a lot. I was on national radio quite a bit. I was a considerably better known figure, I guess, among the Irish general population than I am now. And then I realized that, wait a minute, why are they so accommodating to have you on? And my conclusion from it was that I was playing what might be called playpen politics, which was staying within the safe rails that they consider Yeah, we can paint him as an extremist, but he won't actually say anything that would actually upset the apple cart, that would actually go too far, or actually reveal anything that we couldn't deal with. And as soon as I did, on the other hand, immediately became a problem. So I'm one of those few figures internationally speaking in that sense, is that I've gone from being relatively mainstream and being allowed on long before podcasting. I'm talking about
Yeah, like the
mainstream.
mainstream media would bring you on. Yeah, then you got ostracized.
The equivalent of Fox News here, I'm talking CNN. Like, now I was the enemy, but I was the
But
okay
they would
enemy.
still talk to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when one starts to talk about the actual core issues, and when those core issues came to the fore in our country, they weren't the social issues anymore, or the culture war issues, as they're sometimes called.
And that's what they want us fighting over.
LGBTQ, for example, was a non-thing in Ireland. Homosexuality, or homosexual acts in particular, were illegal in Ireland until 1994. So, and when they were made legal, their legality was not popular. Abortion was illegal in all circumstances. There was a constitutional provision preventing it. Again, that was in the 1990s, an overwhelmingly popular position, not among the media pundits, but among the general public. And the immigration issue, well, to put it at its absolute crudest, Ireland was too poor until the advent of the Celtic Tiger economy, which was more or less coincided with that decade of the 90s and the first decade of the new millennium, that Ireland's economy picked up to such an extent that we finally became, in the first instance, an attractive destination for large numbers of immigrants. And secondly, there seemed to be a deliberate targeting of Ireland almost as a social experiment, precisely because we had been so conservative. It was a very religiously minded country. It was a very Catholic country. The moral principles of the Catholic Church were pretty much the average person in the street view of the world, either consciously or unconsciously. And it seemed like there was a social experiment carried out in Ireland through the 90s into the 2010s as to whether you could fabricate a or astroturf a change in a society like that. And the answer, by the way, to that experiment is yes, you can. Yes, you
Yes,
absolutely
definitely.
can. If you pour enough money in, if you create enough NGOs, if you have the right media slant, if you make sure that the spokespeople for the opposition to the way things are going are always handpicked to either be the conservatives of retreat, as I call them, or head the balls, which is another phrase, which is for the crazies. Then you could make it happen. And so we had gay marriage in 2015 by referendum. I think we're the only country who had, like, thus far was
That was the
legalized.
right time. It was pushed through in America around the same time too. I want to go back to NGOs again real quick. You mentioned that. To me, I don't know a lot about them. I need to research them, but they seem like a big part of the problem. It's these non-government agencies that are massively funded, generally by a certain group of people. We mentioned self-censoring. We have to do this a little bit on YouTube, but I think most of my audience will understand who these people are. They're funding mass amounts of money in, and then they want to flood open borders in America, Europe, basically everywhere but that one little small nation in the Middle East, flooding open borders. And again, I don't know the inner workings of these things, but they seem like a massive problem in America. And it sounds like it's the same in Europe. All right. Quick break to talk about something I've just started using, Rumble Wallet. If you've ever been curious about buying and investing in cryptocurrencies or Bitcoin or Tether, but felt like it was too complicated, Rumble Wallet is an easy way to get started. You can buy, sell, and manage your cryptocurrencies all in one place. The app is super easy and straightforward. What really makes Rumble Wallet unique is that you can use it to tip your favorite creators on Rumble. To get started, download the Rumble Wallet app and sign up with your existing Rumble account. Click my link in the descriptions or search Rumble Wallet in your app store.
It's such a massive problem in Ireland that at a meeting of the United Nations, one of the representatives of an African country, having met with various representatives from Ireland on the question of, you know, various world issues and whatever, actually asked the question, in all seriousness, she actually asked the question was, is there anybody in Ireland who does not work for an NGO? Because she had never met anybody who, oh, what do you do for a living? I work for an NGO. The next expert testimony we're going to hear is from a doctor such and such. So who do you work with? And how do you know what you report to know? And he's an NGO. And there's another NGO and another NGO. And even the phrase for in Ireland, but especially the phrase non-governmental organization is a misnomer, because although there is a huge amount of private capital flowing into the NGO sector all over the world, from things like the Soros Foundation, et cetera, et cetera. In Ireland, the NGO sector is very much government dependent.
Wow. It is in America too.
So the government pays these people a large amount of money. And then they come back and tell the government that they should do such and such a thing, which is what the government wanted to be asked to do in the first place.
It seems like they're trying to destroy the government, though. They act like they're doing good acts, but to me, it seems like they're trying to destroy our countries. That's how I see it. Like, they say that we're trying to help people.
They are questioning it. And I mean, the so-called conspiracy theory of the great replacement of the white European races is... and European descendant races in the United States, Canada, Australia, South Africa, etc., etc. To even call that a theory anymore is as absurd as Newton's law of gravity. It's like it's there on display.
It's clear, it's not happening.
It's a theory. Technically, it's still a theory, but the fact of the matter is you throw the ball up, the ball comes back down. You throw the doors open, the immigrants come in huge numbers. Mm-hmm. And the population change in Ireland has been particularly spectacular in terms of numbers over a very short space of time.
Like how many came in, how fast, and from mostly what countries?
Well, we are talking about a situation in which, in say the mid 2000s, there would have been almost no foreign population in Ireland. Those who were foreign were what you might call quasi-foreign. They might have been British-born, but to Irish parents, and they might be American-born, but they were Irish-Americans, et cetera, et cetera. With a smattering of French and Germans, a tiny number. Mm-hmm. And then the doors open. Today, by government statistics, and they won't break them down by ethnicity, mm-hmm. But by government statistics, 23% of the Irish population is foreign-born.
That's
not second generation born
that's
in
first
Ireland.
First generation, like they
that's
born,
first
born.
Generation wow. in the door was born somewhere else.
That is insane.
So,
that your country's Irish don't exist anymore. And it's like they've gaslit us into saying it's racist to say our people have a right to exist. It's like
Well, I mean, I'll be honest with you. If that's the label they want to go with, then that's fine.
Yeah, I
If
don't
it's
care.
racist, it's racist.
Yeah, I
Because
don't
the fact
care.
of the matter is that our view of nationalism, our view in Clann Éire now, and the Irish view of nationalism has its foundation in the same as, I guess, to a certain extent, the United States, in our founding fathers, but in particular, the rebels of 1916. And Páraic Pearse, who was the first president of the Irish Republic, described the nation as a family grown large. Now, that is an apt description to me, and that, by definition, requires blood relation. We do not have it deeply embedded in our consciousness, although again the NGO sector are attempting to do that, but we do not have embedded in the Irish consciousness the idea that you can just be Irish because you have a passport or you have a document or you have a naturalization piece
I
of
can
paper.
never, be Chinese. I can never be Japanese. You know, I can never be Moroccan. So
Yes.
it's just the
Yeah.
truth of the
So
matter. And I'm not
like,
hateful at all. I have lots of good friends that are there.
practically speaking, racist. Well, yes, but I mean, if you're going to use that logic, then the fact that I care more about my wife and children than I do about my neighbor's wife and children is
Obviously, I would hope you do.
a hostility and hatred towards my next door neighbor, which I clearly don't have. But the fact of the matter is that I put my own blood first. And as it happens, my neighbor is next, and my community is next, and my county is next, and then my nation is next, and then my race is next. And if that's, and that's racist, okay, that's racist. But what I want to know is not whether it's racist or not. That's not the key question. The key question for people who say, oh, well, what you're presenting there is racism. Will you please explain to me what's wrong with my
Yeah,
racism as you have
nothing
described it?
wrong with looking at your people first. Me, you know, I come from the fight world where I was a fighter my entire life. So I was really good friends with lots of people from other races. And that's why at first I was a little resistant until I talked to people that weren't hateful. And something I've noticed though about all these people I hung out with, whether they're Chinese, Afghan, these different cultures, they would always help their own race out first. Now I got special treatment because I was a fighter connected in these communities. But I noticed as a whole, they would always help an Afghan over a white, always help a Chinese over a white. And that's something that's in the back of my head, like, wait, we do the opposite. And again, these
Yeah,
people
we do
weren't
the
hateful.
opposite.
They weren't doing it in a hateful way. They were just like, oh, you
Oh,
get a discount because you're Chinese. I would see stuff like that and be like, and that's in America, not in China. So I remember
yeah.
seeing that and putting that in the back of my head, being like, oh, that's interesting. I said they always treated me good from the fighter aspect. But as a whole, if they're looking out for their people before our people, and again, they weren't doing it in a hateful way, but it was that would be considered racist if we're doing it.
Yeah, it was obvious and it was clear and they're unembarrassed about it.
Yeah. Oh, no, they're not ashamed about it at all.
I don't have a problem with that in the sense that I expect that to be the case. Where what in a particularly what was an ethnically homogeneous nation like Ireland until very recently, what I have a strong objection to them doing is take somebody from Chinese ethnic extraction is putting Chinese people first in Ireland. If I go to Beijing and I find myself treated as an outsider, I'm fine with that. I'm a guest in their country, and I would expect to be treated, number one, I'd expect to be treated as a guest. I'd expect to be treated fairly. Although I don't know, it is red China still.
I've
But
never been to China, but it does seem
let's go to Japan to a
I've been
for
to Japan like 10 times, so
a
they'd
nicer
never
group
treat me
of
the same. They didn't treat me
yeah,
bad,
for a
but it's
nicer
clearly
group
not
of
them.
is I would expect them to treat me with decency, with common courtesy, and be pleasant, but nonetheless, at the back of their mind, they understand that I'm a guest. That I am going to be here for a certain length of time, and I am not bringing a horde of other Irish people after me. I'm not trying to change Japan I'm not saying
to adapt to their culture that they're there. They expect you to adapt to what they do. And I'm okay with
walking around Tokyo going, there are too many Japanese, which is precisely, we hear this on our main television broadcasts and our main media broadcasts in Ireland and in our print media as well, is that our civil service is too white, our police force is too white, our teachers are too white, our media personalities, in the media personalities who are white are telling us that their media personalities are too white.
A lot of them are off-white. A lot of the media personalities are white adjacent. Yes.
That's not so much in Ireland yet, because but it will become the case. But the pressure is there to create special positions for people.
Yeah. When they're the guests,
because they are not Irish, that they require a special position within Ireland. And they are to be treated better than the Irish people. And this is where they were finding this with, especially with the asylum seekers, the people who come in saying, oh, we've come from a war-torn country and we are terribly persecuted where we're from. On the other hand, what you often find is they come from a country that the United Nations itself has declared is a safe country. Nowhere is absolutely safe by definition.
NGOs teach them to say that, at least in the U.S. Yeah. They tell them to say it's not safe to go home. They give them these guides, so they come through and they say, it's not safe, I can't go home.
Yeah. And then the special treatment kicks in. Is, immediately they're housed, hoteled, what's got, they're given a special allowance, and they are all their bills and everything else are taken care of, and they're given an allowance in excess of that. And they're first on the housing list then to be actually put into...
Before Irish people.
Before Irish people. And this is occurring in the middle of a housing crisis in Ireland, in which it is almost impossible for a young person.
We have the same problem in America. It's just
to buy their own home.
Yeah. And these older people are like, oh, they're just not working hard and stuff. It's like, no, the prices are really expensive. You know,
I know this, and I'll say this quite straight, because I am of a certain age. I'm not quite a boomer. Watch God, I fit into Generation X. But because of the speed, as it were, of the way things change in any given country, is I made it in, as it were, to the boomer generation in Ireland in terms of economics. And so the house that I'm living in, I own that house.
Yeah.
Right. So I could say to people, look, why don't you try as hard?
You can't own a house, yeah.
I'm telling you, I know for a fact that if I was to be in the situation I was in my 20s, now, today, I could do all the things that I did then that got me what I have, and I would not have it.
No, it's hard buying a house. And Trump recently said he was going to bring the prices down. Then he goes, oh, you know what? I want the people to keep their wealth in the house. It's like, I own a house. Why do I need my house to be worth more? I would rather a young person be able to afford a house. It's like, I get it. You want some self-interest, but it gets to the point where it's just greed. These people get like disgusting.
You see, when you start to regard a home as just another form of capital, as opposed to a place for yourself and your family to live in.
Exactly.
Because when it's a place for yourself and your family to live in, for example, I live in a quite modest home here. It's relatively small. By American standards, it's probably considered tiny.
Yeah.
A holiday home, perhaps. But the thing about it is that, first of all, I own it. It's mine. And I have the security of that. But second of all, I haven't the faintest notion how much my house is worth.
Yeah, because it doesn't
matter. Is it of any interest to me? I'll tell you what it's worth. Is it keeps my children warm. It keeps the rain off their heads, and it gives them to somewhere comfortable to go to sleep and safely at night. That's the value of my home.
Exactly. I have a couple of things I hope to leave them to my kids. I don't plan, I don't need to look at the price of my homes. I don't care if they go up or down that much. If they go down to young people, young, hardworking families of American descent can buy homes, I would be okay with that.
Exactly. And then and from a personal point of view as a homeowner, I have the home that I want. It's gone up in these digit figures, or it's gone down in these digit figures. Neither gives nor takes anything from me.
Exactly.
But when you're a first time buyer, when you're a young couple starting out in life, that digit figure is absolutely crucial to you. Because in order to get the roof over your head, in order to get the place where you can have your children, in order to get the place where they are comfortable and safe, is you must find a monetary figure. And that monetary figure now, as compared to the average income of that couple, are so far out of skew with each other that there is no longer any relationship with them at all. And the idea to say is, oh, if only you worked harder, if only you saved more, if only you were more careful. They don't seem to, there's a generation, we have them here in Ireland too.
Yeah.
It's a generation who simply do not understand that if we did what they did, if we worked as hard as they worked, made the same sacrifices they made, we would not get anywhere with those sacrifices. It would make no difference, because the market has, in housing in particular, and housing is the basis of everything, because it's
the sense. They don't want children because they don't have a house. So that's I think you guys are having the same problem with birth rates are down with like white families, because they're like, oh, we can't afford it. But then, like you said, they're bringing people, foreigners in, giving them houses, it's called Section 8 over here, where they get houses super cheap. They were giving them free hotels. They're getting welfare. But our own people can't afford to have children, can't afford a home. And on top of that, we have like BlackRock and Blackstone, these giant investment companies coming up and buying homes. I know in Las Vegas, where I live, 25% of the home sales were by one of these firms like a year ago. I don't know what it is now. I didn't check this year, but that's like a lot. They're typically not selling them once they get them. They're coming in all cash, buying up these homes, driving up prices, so families can't afford them.
Exactly. And you take a small country like Ireland in particular, and you have an open borders policy. Now, theoretically, we don't. You're only allowed in if you're like a worker or with special skills. But like these workers with special skills end up being delivery drivers. I mean, I don't understand the special skill that's involved. You've got the asylum seekers coming from safe countries saying, I'm fleeing a war. And largely speaking, their asylum applications fail. And then they request, because on the basis that the process has taken 10 years, that they've acclimatized to being in Ireland now, and they ask for leave to remain, despite the fact that it has been found their original reason for coming to the country was a lie.
Yeah.
Okay, so the first thing you did when you walked in the door is you lied. And now you're saying to us, ah, yeah, but I've been lying to you for so long now. Surely you've got used to me too much. And I've certainly got used to lying to you, so I should be allowed to continue to stay.
Yeah, I don't like liars. Get out.
Yeah, basically. And it should be, it should have, first of all, a tiny country like Ireland just has to say no. And I mean, when I say no, I mean absolutely no. No asylum seekers. We're too small. We're far too small a country. We have a population of 6 million on a tiny island.
That's it? 6 million? Oh, you guys are really small.
Yes.
I didn't know you only had 6 million. That's like a big city in America. That's like
that's including the six occupied counties of Northern Ireland, which are under British jurisdiction. But I always, when I say Ireland, I always mean the 32 counties. So we're talking about 4.5 million if you were to talk about the 26 county Free State, or what is technically the Irish Republic. But a wet end the jurisdiction of the government in Dublin, shall we say. But the policies...
Yeah, way smaller than I realized. That's like so few people.
Yeah, the vast majority of the diaspora, the Irish diaspora outnumbers the native Irish population by many, many times. And again, I have to go back to that thing. Is that 6 million that I'm talking about? One and a half million of those. Yeah, it is a bit of a coincidence.
That number. I'm sorry, my mind is hard not to laugh when I hear that number.
Watch God, they who shall not be named. Well, about 1.5 million of those people aren't Irish. So you've got a population within the country of six, but 1.5 of those already are not Irish. And we have an influx of foreigners at the rate, as I say, they're not ethnically broken down, but at the rate of about 80 to 90,000 a year.
Wow. That is a lot with that so few people.
Exactly. And just in the practicalities, in a utopian Marxist-Leninist viewed world, in which there was no such thing as race, there was no such thing as culture, there was no such thing as ethnicity, there was no such thing as death, crime, there was no such thing as any kind of like grating off each other as ethnic groups within the country. If that were not the case, the fact of the matter is that, I'll give to you in figures again, is that Irish houses are built at the rate of about 35,000 a year. And the population is rising by 80,000.
So now, that's a big problem.
You could double the number of houses that are being built, and you would still be behind the number who have come in just this year alone. So it's housed the world. And the idea that a country the size of ours can do that is absurd.
How are the people reacting? Are the people angry, or are they going along with it, or what's
the problem? The problem is on the specific issue of immigration. Yes, the overwhelming majority of Irish people are opposed to at least the rate of immigration. If they're not, they don't take the more hardline stance that I would take, which is to say almost no immigration, almost none. Certainly not population transfer levels of immigration. But if you take a broader picture of it, is immigration too high? Then you'll get 80 to 90% of Irish people who will say, yes, yep, it is too high. The problem is they then go out and vote for political parties whose policy platform is to not close the borders and to continue the process of bringing in all of these new people with all of the problems, the practical problems, never mind the ethnic and cultural and crime problems that they bring. There's the practical problems of accommodating that number of new people every year
into a
small society, and paying for it not only in terms of housing but extra schools, extra hospitals, extra services of all kinds. They just simply cannot be built fast enough, and the result is that people have to do without, and largely speaking it's the Irish people, the native people, who are doing without what they can afford as a nation, as a state. The Irish state could afford to take care of the Irish people. The economy, which is a little bit shaky in the sense it's very much based on multinational corporate investment and so forth, that could disappear in the morning. But the actual numbers on a page don't look too bad. in terms of the Irish economy. Could we solve the problem with it, with the amount of money we have? We could for the Irish people, we could. But what we can't do is solve the world's problems. And I think a lot of countries, and you take the somewhere like the United States, which is the huge country, the last superpower, as it were. And certainly it was after the fall of the Soviet Union, whatever. Now you're talking about on a grandiose scale. But still, you have a situation where the US government, both Congress and now the president as well, seems to think that the world's problems are America's problems and America must solve them all. Now, even a country the size and power and money of the United States cannot solve the problems that it has within itself, within the 50 states, and then turns its face abroad to try to solve the problems of Africa, the Middle East, Southeast Asia, the Pacific, etc. Well,
we're collapsing. Have you been to America? We're falling apart. There's drug addicts everywhere. The infrastructure, the airports, the roads, the schools. Our country's in complete decay, and we're caring about everyone else. And to me, I look at it like, every man should first look, okay, I got to take care of myself, make money for myself, make my own self a better man. Then help your wife and children, get them better. Then your friends, then your neighbors, then, you know, the people in your city, then, you know, state, then country. And then if there's anything left, then you could help the rest of the world. But we don't have our own shit worked out yet. You know, yes. I can't help you if I don't, I can't help my wife if I don't help myself. You know, I can't help my children if I don't get myself in order first.
Well, so it's like what's actually happening, if you were to bring it down onto a personal basis, exactly like you're talking about, is it's almost like the governments of the West in general, Ireland included, the government of the West in general, are like heroin addicts, only taking care of other people is their heroin. They will find the money for that. They will always find the money for that. And if there's no food on the family table or there's no roof over the family head, the heroin money must still be got from somewhere.
It's like our kids go hungry to feed the other people or the heroin. Exactly. You know, I grew up on drug addict.
So we're addicted. The only way to describe it is multiculturalism has become the addiction of Western liberal civilization. And taking care of other people before taking care of your own has become an actual addiction.
Hey guys, I want to introduce you to one of our sponsors, Antelope Hill Publishing. Antelope Hill publishes books such as Culture of Critique by Dr. Kevin McDonald, who's someone I've interviewed on my show. He talks about the evolutionary strategy of the chosen people. So go to antelopehillpublishing.com and use promo code FIGHTBACK to support the podcast and get a discount. That's antelopehillpublishing.com and promo code FIGHTBACK. Why buy or sell a gun from a company that hates you and your values when you can support free speech and the podcast by going to armslist.com to buy, sell, trade all firearms and accessories. So get the discount, go to armslist.com and put in promo code FIGHTBACK and it'll be only $1 the first month.
With all the maladies associated with an addiction, which is that, first of all, is that your own people are malnourished. Your own people are doing without. Your own people are homeless. Your own people don't have proper educational services. Your own people don't have proper travel services, etc., etc., etc. And so Ireland, despite the economy, now the extent to which it's real because of, as I said, multinational investment, and which could pull out overnight, is another story. But we could be living well, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
We could be living well. But we're not. And the average Irish person is not. And what we've seen over the course of this weekend is a crisis in Ireland, which is has been caused, but to a certain extent by international events, with the oil prices rising, the oil prices being...
Trump's fighting a war to try to get the Strait open, you know? You have what a genius. The Strait was already open, you fucking moron. It's like, geez.
It's a crazy situation. But we have a government in Ireland which is telling us that it's all to do with the Strait of Hormuz, and it's all to do with the shortage of world oil supply as the price of oil goes up. Yet it charges a 65% tax rate
65%.
On fuel.
Wow, that's insane. People.
So.
Can't afford to drive.
As the price rises, the government revenues from fuel are actually increasing.
Percentage, yeah, it goes up over my percentage.
Yeah, we've had a huge protests over the course of the last week or so in an effort to try and bring down the price of fuel specifically, which is entirely within the remit of the Irish government in the sense that 65% of the price of what you put in your actual petrol tank, diesel tank, goes straight to the Irish government. It has nothing to do with world market prices as such. The government's response was to call out the public order unit, which is essentially the riot police of an Garda Síochána, and in what I think is an unprecedented move, certainly this century, and we're a quarter way through it, they've called out the army. They've actually called the army
for protesters.
We don't have the equivalent of the National Guard. This is a straight up, like, you know,
the army is there to stop protesters.
The army is there to at least intimidate protesters. So we have we're driving along a road in Ireland now, and it is common for us to see an armored car pass. And that armored car, we know, if we see that, is on its way to what the Gardaí the police have told them is a volatile situation. Now,
people can't afford gas to go to work.
And yeah, they want to
send an army.
Basically, and there was an attempt to blockade the ports, to blockade the roads in an effort to create a crisis that the government would be forced to address. And in order to clear the streets, they sent in the riot police first, and everybody could see the armored vehicles of the army behind them. So if there was any possibility of it getting out of hand, they were present and they were there. And that to me is martial law. And that to me, are we at war with Iran? I mean, we're not. Officially, you're
Fortunately,
not.
We are, but yeah, it's like.
No, which, you're not. You're in a.
Oh, yeah, we're like, not, because he didn't declare it through. Yeah, in our constitution, you have to go declare war through Congress. Trump hasn't done that.
Peacing action.
You know, the Democrats aren't even going that hard against them, which that shows you both sides in America, they all support Israel. And it's just disgusting when you see your country, you know, for sure, you have humanity. You've watched what they did to the Palestinians, the Lebanese. Yeah. It's just sick what they've done as a father, you know, like some of these, a few of the white nationalists that don't have any sympathy for them. It's like, how can you not have sympathy for what these people are going through? And they're resisting to wake up the whole world. I think it's like what they're doing to them, these same people would do to us.
They would absolutely do it to us. And indeed, they are doing it to us in a more subtle way in the sense that because they are not the majority, because they can't avail of a foreign military like to bring in the United States with overwhelming military power, they must use largely the political systems within the countries of Western Europe themselves. But that great replacement that we're talking about, that the huge population movements in order to change the makeup of the nation is genocide. It's less bloody, and not always, because we have the instances of like the rising rate of violent crime, which is...
Yeah, you guys have that country, right? Wasn't there riots over there recently? Didn't you guys just have riots in... Was that Ireland where they tried... I think some girls were raped and they maybe attacked the housing they were living in? Or is that...
There's been a number of incidents that have built over the last year. One was where a foreign immigrant stabbed several school children. And that resulted in an explosion, as it were, in the
Rightfully
capital
so.
city, in terms of people's anger at the government for not for having let them in the first place, and second of all, for not dealing with the situation properly. And then we've had a number of horrific individual cases, like Aisling Murphy, which is can only be described as the equivalent of Irina Zarutska
Oh, you had a case like that?
it was as straightforward as that. The young woman was taking a run by the canal in a relatively small town in Ireland, was attacked, stabbed 14 times in the neck. Stabbed 14 times in the neck. And when the media at the time were for, see, this has come out since it's come to court. But when the media at the time were reporting on the crime, they did have to report the death. They did have to report the murder, but they neglected to report the brutality of the murder. They
It just fucking
neglected
pisses me
anything
off.
else.
It doesn't fit their narrative, right? It's not the right race, so they don't fucking push it. It pisses me off so bad. And the girl, they're painting murals in the US. One of the I can't remember what city, but there was like a mayor somewhere. He wouldn't let him paint her mural. He was a white, he wasn't white, he was white adjacent, and he wouldn't let a mural, a
Yeah,
white mural
why did Jason?
go. It's just like, wow. Like this,
Well,
it's just
the white adjacent people are the single most anti-white. The
Yes,
single
that's what I
most anti-white.
noticed. I
You will not find a black person who is more hostile and
Yes. And
vitriolically
that's who
and
pushed the black people to have,
institutionally
they're
hostile.
the ones that train the black people to have the anti-white hate. Once I
Yeah.
realized that,
Exactly,
I never
exactly.
understood the anti, I always thought it was white people that were anti-white. And one day one of my friends sent me something, a big list of these books and who wrote them. And it just like a light bulb went off in my head. I was just like so angry when I realized like they're pushing hate towards us with disguising, pretending like it's us. And they're
Well,
pushing it black people and other races.
when I met my wife, which is many years ago now, she was not politically aware, and certainly to advance what we're talking about here would have sounded like a conspiracy theory to her. So I took an issue which was already close to her heart insofar as politics, she was political at all, which was the pro-life issue, the abortion issue. And I said to her, separate to just, I didn't put a list of names in front of her. I said, you go, because it's the age of the internet, you go home and you look at the names of the main people who were part of the propaganda for bringing it in each and every
Interesting.
country in the world,
I
and
wasn't aware of this. I can't believe I wasn't aware of this.
look at the names of who are actually the practitioners of abortion right now.
Wow, I
And you
didn't. I've
come
not
after
gone
me.
down this rabbit hole. I can't believe I can't believe I didn't know this because I should have known this. And it's they try to vilify the pro-life people like they're the bad people, and clearly they're on the right side, you know. And I get it. Life is complicated, but even when I was like kind of on the left leaning, when everyone just so made light of abortion, it was always like, you're taking a life. How can you not take that seriously? I got a girl pregnant when I was young, college, not ready to be a dad. My friends just thought I was gonna get an abortion. And it's just like, I can't kill my baby. I hadn't really thought about it much, but you just feel a life in there. And they act like it's just,
Yeah.
like it's just nothing. I didn't realize it was all the people that pushing that. I should have been aware of
Oh,
that. I didn't know that.
well, that's where I started her, and she came back, as it were, and she went, "Okay, you're right. You're right. They're all the same tribe."
Gays of
So
the
you
tribe. Yeah,
told
no,
me
interesting.
what's caught, and I said, "Okay, right. You'll be surprised what else they're behind." And I gave her industry after industry after
One thing at a
Hollywood.
time, right? That's what I try to, you don't give people too much at a time. That's what I'm telling people.
Well,
I'll try to get
you have to get
one or two
the
things
issue
at a
that they
time.
already care about. Yeah, this is my thing. They already care about the issue. They already have a strong point of view. There's no point in pointing out to somebody who's strongly pro-abortion, for example,
Yeah,
the
because that then you want to
expenses.
use that with them.
Because actually, that's going to be, if you'll pardon the euphemism, that's going to be a star for them.
Exactly.
Oh, they have to, and they do broadcasts to that effect. Is look at how much our people have contributed to your right to choose. Mm-hmm. Well, turn it around. Because they are correct. They are correct. Yeah. If you have a right to choose, you owe these people a lot.
Yeah.
Because they
a lot of the civil rights movement they pushed in America, but they didn't help black people.
Really put the work in terms of destroying ethnic homogeneity in Ireland. If you think that's a good thing, these people have put in an extraordinary, disproportionate amount of work. Yeah. If you think that Hollywood and the media entertainment industry is more edifying than it used to be, then there is a group of people that you need to be grateful to because they did it. And you just need to check the names. Now, they have a tendency to change the names so they don't sound
like name change, but yeah.
But...
Yeah, I had no idea about that.
To be honest, they don't do it that much anymore, for start. And second of all, I don't know who came up with the idea, but they all decided to change to the same names. So they have now become,
that high IQ you hear about is maybe a myth.
Yeah, it is. It does appear to be.
It just works together really well.
This name doesn't sound good. What's called, we're easily identified as being who we are under this name. So let's all change our name to the same thing until that's exactly what people go, oh, there's a lot of people called who actually, you look into the abortion industry, you look into the National Abortion Rights Action League before abortion was legal, you look into Planned Parenthood, you look into the actual abortion practitioners, the number of I hesitate to call them doctors, but let's call them medical professionals for a moment, because they have medical capacities that you or I would not have. Well,
they're literally killing kids for a living. How the fuck could you do that job? It's like sick and demonic. It's, and a lot of these people are proud of it. They like, there was one doctor who was actually of that descent. You said, well, he was storing them. I think I can't remember the exact numbers. It might have been like 70,000 babies he had in jars, like in a container. It was in the thousands for sure. I don't know the exact number, but he was keeping these babies legally. He was taking them out. It's like, what kind of sick, twisted, demonic stuff is this? I don't know.
Well, I am a moderately religious person myself. I'm Roman Catholic. Now, having said that, the last few popes have not exactly pumped up my passion for the faith. But you know, the Catholic faith is more than the popes. But let's leave aside whether you believe in metaphysicality, in the sense of demonic possession or demonic influence, in the metaphysical sense, in the human sense. Mm-hmm. The human sense is, what I mean is, if I'm a believing Roman Catholic, so therefore I act in a certain way because I think that's what Jesus Christ would want me to act like, then if you were to transfer over the logic without any metaphysics at all, you'd have to say, well, if I worship Satan, then I would have to behave in a certain way in order to demonstrate that. And even if Satan weren't real, that would be evident in the physical world. Now, I know, because being involved in the pro-life movement and having been in a great deal of contact with, in particular, with American pro-lifers and with ex-abortionists in the United States, that they have said to me that a large section of a particular ethnic group are involved in the abortion industry under the heading of conscious Satanism, consciously. Mm-hmm. It's not merely, oh, well, like we can speculate.
Yeah, you're saying it is satanic. You're saying it's consciously satanic.
They are consciously doing it. And basically what my understanding of it is that they apparently fall into three categories. Is they fall into the categories of deliberate satanic ritual.
Human sacrifice, basically. A baby, what better way? If you look through human history, they always wanted babies, young. What better way to trick it than to, oh yeah, we're just getting abortion. This is healthcare. Oh no, we're getting human sacrifice of an unborn baby. I remember a couple years ago, someone said that was absolutely insane. Over the last couple years, my opinions have looked at like, that might be the reality we're in.
As you see, it's the reality, whether, as I said, you don't have to believe in metaphysics. You don't have to believe in a world beyond this one necessarily, or believe in God, or believe in the spirit world per se. All you have to understand is they do.
Yeah, they, exactly. They do.
And if they do, then they act a certain way. So, right, if I'm wrong about my Roman Catholicism, if I'm wrong about the existence of Jesus Christ, right, that would be a fact. And you would be presented with that as a fact at the end of life, whatever the real afterlife is, even if that is nothingness. And I would be presented with that. But within my actual life, my Roman Catholicism affects how I behave.
Yes.
Your Protestantism perfectly, yeah, how you behave. Your Orthodoxy would affect how you behave. Your Hinduism, your Buddhism, whatever your religious perspective
Islam
is.
Islam or Satanism.
Whether it's true or not, it would affect how individuals behave on the human plane. You have, within the abortion industry in particular, and within the entertainment industry, people who are conscious satanic devotees. And I'm not saying
that. Anton Levy from Hollywood, you probably know him, right? He was the founder of the Church of Satan. He actively was pushing that in Hollywood, but I had no clue about this abortion side. I'm going to do a little research on this. This is
You'll find it very, very quickly. Very, very quickly.
You know, I mean, I obviously believe you. After everything I've researched the last couple of years, it's not surprising. I'm surprised I haven't already researched this, because it's like you see the same patterns over and over. And like you said, they are consciously Satanists. Like, a good example, you know, Anton Levy, people don't know, he's the founder of the Church of Satan. He tried pushing it through Hollywood. I think he was involved in attempted assassination with, who was it? One of the Kennedys. He's like a wicked guy. A member of his church went over and founded the Church of Set, which was accused of like molesting hundreds of kids. So these are wicked people, and they were trying to push Satanism in Hollywood. And you're saying there's active Satanists also involved in the abortion industry. That's not surprising. Well, and a lot of them are the same people.
I've been told that by people who are not of a religious persuasion themselves. And they have said it to me in terms of, oh yeah, he considers himself a Satanist.
I have seen the Church of Satan say they support abortion rights, actually. I did see a thing of them saying that. So it makes sense, of course.
The ethnic background is present there as well. It lines up. She said the vast majority of people who are not of that mindset, who are engaged in the abortion industry, she said, are usually alcoholics or drug addicts. They either start out that way and become incompetent doctors, and therefore they have to perform this procedure because if you're doing the one surgical procedure on a daily basis, it's relatively easy to do. And second of all, she said, but the other thing was that the ones that are not consciously satanically motivated, their consciences actually do get to them. And they try to, as human beings do, they should try to be better people. But what they do, in fact, is they try and drown out their human compassion and their human feeling. And they do that with alcohol and drugs.
Yeah,
I mean, that's rife in the, and that was my first introduction to them as a distinct people that I knew the names and faces of, and in some cases had met. In a country like Ireland, for example, there are about 2,000
So that's not very many. Yeah, we have a lot.
That's not very many. I think I've met about 200 of them.
Wow. I bet they have a lot of power still.
They are disproportionately represented in the leadership of the push behind gay marriage, the push behind legalized abortion, the push behind multiculturalism, and so on and so forth. And when I say disproportionately, when you're talking about, I mean, Ireland has a small population of 6 million, as I say, but 2,000 within 6 million shouldn't be even.
You see what's happening in Australia, right? How they're changing all these free speech laws and stuff over. I think there's like that maybe 50,000, 40,000 in Australia, and they passed all these special laws where you can't criticize them. It's like they're always manipulating. A little off topic, but the first time I saw you, I'll just go and say the word, we just bleep it out for the YouTube. You were maybe at a protest or something, and this reporter, I think maybe a Blaze reporter, came up to you, and you're just like, oh, I don't talk to Jews. We try to interview you. And you're like, I think you said, go be a Jew somewhere else.
That's correct.
I don't know if I got it exactly right, but I remember that was a while ago when I watched it. It was so funny.
Of Rebel News, and I believe he knew who I was. And I do believe that he was his idea was to provoke exactly what I said at the beginning of the interview, the foaming at the mouth effort. And what he didn't expect, I guess, is I just went, I don't want to answer any questions from a Jew. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what? I don't want to answer any questions from a Jew. I'm not interested in talking to you. And then he went, well, what about my Christian audience? And I said, well, I don't want to talk to your Christian audience through a Jew, because I know how you twist it. And then it literally moved on to him insulting me about my height, the fact that I was supposed to be shaking and terrified. He added in the fact that he thought I was a secret intelligence agent trying to undermine the anti-immigration protest. And he tried to push all the buttons psychologically because he wanted the, I'll use the phrase, even though it's not one that I would like. He wanted a foaming at the mouth Nazi.
Mm-hmm. They want this character. They don't want people making sense. That's what I learned. The most banned guy is like, I don't know if you know Mark Collette. He's the guy I talked to in England. He's like debanked and banned because he's like reasonable, makes sense. Guys like you are reasonable. You are the guys they want to silence.
Or to get to say, and I know this, and this is why I go with the I don't talk to Jews. Because if they get a significant amount of words, literally just words, they can put them together in such a way that you end up sounding like a foaming at the mouth, even if you haven't been. Mm-hmm. And so the only approach that it seems to work from that I think works effectively from our point of view, considering these people are always going to be the enemy of whatever we're standing for. If we're standing for goodness, truth, and right, if we're standing for Western culture and civilization, they are going to be the enemy. And it's not like you're going to be able to persuade them. They are going to take the footage you give them, and they are going to clip and cut it and change it until you sound like whatever it is they want you to sound like. But there isn't a hell of a lot they can do with I don't talk to Jews.
Yeah, I'm kind of doing this.
It's anti-Semitism, but yeah, it is.
Yeah, I've kind of for the most part started doing the same thing. Like, why talk to these people? You know, it's like they won't like platform our people unless it benefits them. So why am I going to platform them on my platform? They feel like this entitlement, like, oh, I have to have them on. It's like, why? You guys, if you had a big platform you built up or pretty decent size, you wouldn't like platform me. Why am I going to platform you? I actually stole your line one time when a guy was annoying me. I said, go be a Jew somewhere else. So I'll have to cut that part on YouTube. It was just such a good line. It was just funny seeing the shock in their face. Like,
He was quite taken aback. But and that to me was just an average Saturday. I mean, I was at a political rally and whatever, but I'm often at a political rally. But it's unusual because, as I said, we don't have a large number of people of that ethnic background in our country as such. But look, anybody on our side, like pretty much has heard of Ezra Levant. I mean,
Yeah, do I know who the, I can't remember his name. He's one of those obnoxious, like, sleazy. They've completely taken over our media, both the right and the left. That was another rabbit hole that
well,
went down a
that's
few years
the
ago when I started looking at all the media, and I'm like, wait, the right-wing guys too. You start like, oh, they control, and then you see how they fire Candace Owens. Like, oh, they took over all the media, left and right, politicians left and right, but there is an awakening right now. Things are changing, you know. And we have like Dan Bilzerian running in America for Congress. It's just one person, but you got to start somewhere. I
Yeah,
don't know if you had a
it's
chance to see him on TMZ where they compared him calling Randy Fine a fat Jew to calling a black guy like a nigger or N-word. It's like, okay, one's an insult. Isn't it bizarre that if you call a Jew, they'll act like you just insulted them? It's like, well,
yeah.
are
Well,
you a
it's not
Jew?
like he ain't arguing the point that he's thin, surely. So, it must be what he takes offense at, and it really does require an enormous degree of obnoxiousness on behalf of a whole section of the population for the very name they use for themselves, that they use for themselves, not that it's been applied to them, that
That's they
is
use it.
for themselves, has become in and of itself a slur word.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you realize, oh, a vampire can't see their own reflection in a mirror. It's like, that makes sense now.
Yes.
Remember, I tweeted just simply that one time, a vampire can't see their own reflection in the mirror, and everyone's yelling at me in the comments, mad. And I'm like, I didn't say anything about who I was referring to. You guys put exactly
It's
who I'm
like,
talking about
yeah,
today.
if you put up a list of the characteristics on a social media
Hates
page,
the cross, you know, sucks the blood of the.
they'll immediately come back at you and go, "That's anti-Semitic." And you say to them, "I never mentioned you.
Exactly.
You recognize yourself."
Yep.
If I write down, for example, if I say, as we've been discussing there a few moments ago, who are the main proponents of abortion and who are the main practitioners of abortion around the world? And they'll go, "That's anti-Semitic."
Exactly.
I'm
Like
just
you're
mentioning.
writing yourself out. Like you don't
Just
even say you're even
mentioning.
about it. They do it all kinds of times, but like stuff like about grief and trans.
You're a paedophile. That pretty much means that you've been to Epstein Island, haven't you? Or an Epstein Island, the equivalent thereof. Or you're working in that in those circles. Certainly, if you're one of the fellow whites. I mean, we have
Hello, hello, my fellow whites.
we have the issue in England, and I'm sure we have it here too, except it hasn't come out to do with the grooming gangs, the Pakistani Muslim grooming gangs, and that's a very, very serious issue. But again, you have to ask yourself, how did they get here in such massive numbers and in such short a space of time? And the answer that Britain is given is, oh, well, it's because you had an empire. Oh, the French are given the same. Oh, it's because you had an empire. The Germans, well, they didn't have an empire. Oh, it's because of the Holocaust.
So they
In
had to.
Ireland, it gets even more absurd, is because a lot of Irish people left Ireland during famine times and during periods of great poverty and so on and so forth, and went to empty countries like Australia, Canada, the United States,
A lot to
to
America, yeah. What
do
America was, you know, I'm part Irish. That was tons of Irish immigrants out here, which the
exactly.
country
That's the reason why
needed.
we have to take in a large number of immigrants. And you know, I remember I was having a debate with somebody about this at one point, and I said, if the American, you keep talking about the Native American Indians who were genocided by the white settlers. And I said, first of all, there's two things. Number one is that the North American continent was largely unpopulated.
Yes.
But second of all, if the North Native American Indian had responded, like I am responding to mass immigration, then the
Yeah.
problem you're talking about, they wouldn't have.
Yeah, they should have came after us all organized right away and got us out.
Right
Another good
away.
example, look at Palestine, what happened.
Jamestown could have been wiped off the map without any great difficulty at all. Without any great difficulty at all. But there were obviously whatever the Iroquois equivalent of an NGO, there's somebody sitting around the campfire going, I don't think these people have come from Europe are too bad. And anyway, there's plenty of room. And I'm sure that there's plenty for everybody. And then there wasn't.
No, there wasn't. In human nature, we're tribal, we're greedy. So if you let too many people from a different tribe, they might start taking over and completely wipe out or ruin your country. And you have to also, I'm not 100% against immigration, but it has to be, well, I'm for 100% pause right now in all Western countries, to figure things out. But it's like things have to be done very slowly. They have to be integrated into society. If you bring too many in at once, they don't integrate. They become their own communities, their own areas. They don't ever become Americans. And I'm sure you run into the same thing in Irish, where they all stay together. Like Europe has a much bigger Muslim problem than America. I'm not saying I want to, people get mad when I say that, some of the European nationalists, like, oh, fuck you. You want to bring a bunch of Muslims? Like, no, I don't want to bring any Muslims into my country. But I'm just saying, as a whole, they don't cause a ton of problems in America right now because most of them are simulated. Now there may be some exceptions in some cities, but like it looks like Europe seems like it is a lot more of a problem. They're not really a
Well,
solution.
they
They are doing
don't.
something.
You see what they the it's exactly what you're saying is they the in the huge numbers that we have them is they have formed a separate society.
Yeah.
Now whether you whether I'm not an integrationist anyway. I don't believe in integration. I don't want integration. I don't want them to integrate. But if you were an integrationist, if you did want them to integrate into society, if you did want them to become part of a multicultural society, then you should also be calling for less.
Yes, because
More
Ireland should
and
mostly
slower.
stay Irish. If it was like 5% maybe mixed in, it probably wouldn't be that big of a problem. But it's way more than that and growing fast. It's like
And
the
growing very quickly,
irony.
and the reality of life, as a consequence, is that there is no integration whatsoever, nor any attempt to. Now, I wouldn't want it because I think it would extinguish our unique Gaelic culture anyway. It would be flooded
Yeah.
just very slowly,
They don't try to
but.
do that to Chinese. They don't try to say Chinese don't have a right to exist. I mean, some people do a little bit, but it's like, I don't know, isn't it kind of good to have some distinct races? Like I said, I hadn't really given it much thought until I talked to a couple of nationalists, and then you realize, oh, they're doing it in every white country. I didn't know it was like that in every single white country and
Well,
so fast.
isn't again diversity is our strength, right? How more diverse can you get if that's the logic that we're going under? Is if you come to Ireland, you'll find an Irish culture, and if you go to France, you'll find a French culture, and if you go to Germany, you'll find a German, and Italy, you'll find an Italian. The way things are, you come to Europe now, you get Muslim in Ireland, you get a Muslim culture in England, you get a Muslim culture in France, in
Yeah,
Germany, and
Paris
that's
is
what it
close
looks
now.
like. I
Dirty.
mean, I remember going, and they were already a significant number, but it's some 20 odd years ago. But like, I look at the Champs-Élysées now, the state that is same. And to me, having physically walked, I haven't physically walked down that particular street for some 20 years now. But when I did, it was one of Europe's most beautiful promenades, as it were. And today it's a rubbish tip. And if people are not willing to honestly understand, agree, and believe that the reason why it looks like a rubbish tip now is because it's not French anymore, then they are not going to be able to prevent all of France becoming the same rubbish tip, all of Germany, all of Italy, et cetera, et cetera. If diversity is our strength, then the logic of diversity being our strength is let us keep our diversity. And the only way we can keep our diversity is by distinct national identities within distinct nation states. And that means that, for example, nobody would accuse me of being an anti-German racist if I said, I don't want a majority of Irish people or the people who live in Ireland to be German.
Yeah. That's a fair point. Like,
it wouldn't be racist.
You wouldn't want that, though. You want Ireland to stay Ireland. You're a distinct people, you know?
The province of Germany, then. Or
Irish and German are different. You guys are different. I've been around Germans. I've been around Irish. You're completely different cultures. They're not the same. For a year or two.
It's interesting, and it is genuinely, to use the classic cliched phrase, it is genuinely enriching to travel the world and experience
different people. And there's a big difference between Germany and Ireland. Big difference. It's a complete, not as big as maybe going to Middle Eastern and not, but there should be culture differences in Europe even. Like, I've traveled a lot of Middle Eastern countries as well. There's big culture difference between Morocco versus UAE. In Morocco, I can't go into a hotel with a Moroccan girl. I think that's great. Why should I be able to take a Moroccan girl and go? Why would they let a white guy go in a hotel with a Moroccan girl? They're smart to be like, no. It's like, some people say that's racist, but I think it's, why would they let foreigners come into their country and, you know, do stuff like that? They're smart. It's like each culture, even in Europe, like Italians are different, Germans are different, like Irish. For about a year, I didn't like the Irish because I cornered Nate Diaz and coached him versus Conor McGregor for both of those fights. And man, you guys are loyal. The Irish, they were tough fans, but then after those fights were over, then they started being great to us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll not take responsibility for everybody, every one of my countrymen and everything they've ever done. So I leave that there, except that there is a unifying, broad unifying culture in Ireland, a way of going about things, a way of looking at the world. And it may seem peculiar to the outsider, but we're comfortable with it and we like it.
Yeah.
And we don't want it to change, or at least the vast majority of us don't want it to change.
Well, even though I'm critical of power, I watched you guys, how they riled around him, how the whole country, you know, tens of thousands of people flying out from Ireland, you know, yelling at us. You got to respect that. They had some pride in their country, but, you know, behind their first great Irish fighter. There's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. And as I say, no one would consider, but the diversity of the world and the greatness of the diversity of the world, in truth, is that the differences survive separate to each other, more or less. I mean, as I said, people visit, people like there's a degree of crossover immigration. Some people move here, some people move there in relatively small numbers over lengthy periods of time. Yeah. That happens. But what you end up with is the, and this is back to the globalist question, what you end up with is not with diversity, but even if you didn't have, and it looks like that's exactly what will happen, but even if you didn't have an explosive situation as a result of large numbers of foreigners coming into the Western Europe, even if you don't foresee a civil war situation or an ethnic bloodbath, or to put it in its most extreme way, sense, if you don't see a race war coming out of it, what's the best case scenario? I'll tell you what the best case scenario, and this is really horrible too. is the best case scenario is the McDonaldization of the world and sameness, a gray, formless, cultureless, shapeless, atomic human being who has no way of unique way of looking at the world, no unique way. And one of the drabbest elements of George Orwell's 1984, and one of the scariest parts of it, in my opinion, which is not normally referred to, is they talk about the, like, there's the torture and there's the suppression and all the rest of it. But what I find most sinister about the world which he describes is that it's utter sameness, and the elimination of the individual as a unique thing, and it's only within national cultures and within ethnic cultures that the uniqueness of the individual can be preserved, either, or else we just become mass product. Yeah, and I think the people who run the world do regard us as exactly that. They regard us as cattle. They use the word.
Yep.
Regard us as cattle. And one beef burger is the same as another, as far as they're concerned. And that is their view of humanity. And it is a very dark and a very macabre way of viewing society, and the result of viewing people and the result of viewing society that way is monstrous in its effect. It becomes the Epstein Islands. It becomes the rape gangs. It becomes the mass murder of people on ethnic scale. It becomes it becomes a brutal and cruel world where we are abiding by the law of the jungle, literally, and survival becomes, instead of, you see, a lot of people take civilization for granted. Civilization is far from normal.
Collapsed. Collapse easily. People don't realize how easy it can collapse too, like how things just can completely fall apart, and it has historically lots of times in lots of nations.
And so it is the collective impulse of the human being working together with his own kind that actually creates a civilization in the first place. Or a nation, or a state, or for that matter, even an empire. But the reality now is that we are approaching a point where Western culture and civilization has demographically reached a phase where it is going to be unable to sustain itself in its current form.
They're not bringing the best people over either from these other countries. I think that's important to add. A lot of times it's not the best that are coming. It's people that are having, they do want free stuff.
I'm not a Trump fan in general, but I do think one of the things he said way back in 2016, when it was still possible to believe that maybe some of the things he was saying were true.
Yeah, I voted for him the first term.
I assume I probably would have too. There was hope. There was a possibility, and it was worth a try. But one of the things he said about Mexico specifically, but it could be true of anywhere else, is they're not sending their best. As in, whatever you think about the cultural level of those nations in and of themselves, is the people who are leaving are generally speaking, and especially in the modern world, where you have the welfare state, and where you have the opportunity for essentially lazy people to go, it's hard to live here. It'd be really easy to live over there. you are not going to with that kind. You know, when America was discovered or populated, it literally had to be cut out of the forest, right? You don't
get to be lazy. Yeah, it wasn't lazy people jumping on the ship, you know, sailing across the world, being like, "Oh, we don't know what we're going to get into."
I'm going to clear a 100-acre family or a farm here, and I'm going to do that by cutting down all of these, all of this foliage and trees that are in the way. And I'm going to make this a workable agricultural space.
It was pretty impressive what the people did back then. You read some of these old books. Wow, these people were like so competent. You know, but unfortunately, we got to wrap in the next 5 minutes because I wanted to go deep into economics. Maybe next time we could do that since it went so quick. Because I want to hear your perspective. We don't have time to do a deep dive right now of like, you know, capitalism, communism, or maybe
a
type of socialism. Let's do that in a few months because time wise, I feel like if you're getting there right now, it's probably going to take a while, right? I need to wrap in a few minutes. Let's do a full, because I would love to go deep into the, because I don't know, you know, I'm a capitalist, I guess, but you can see there's huge problems in America where it's not quite working, where it's like we don't care about the other country.
May I offer you?
Oh, yeah, let's do it. We can go 5 minutes into it, but I'd be down to do another conversation.
Instead of saying capitalism, is that I believe in free productive enterprise. That's not capitalism. And when we go into it deeper, I'll explain what I believe is the difference between an economy that's based on free productive enterprise and an economy that is based on finance capital, and how they are utterly different phenomena, and how, for example, the United States or Ireland, for that matter, is a mix of the two. But the tilt is further and further towards finance capitalism.
Yeah, that's what I'm seeing. Capitalism. I'm seeing it's not quite working what we're doing. Something needs to be.
And communism, in its purest form, Marxist-Leninism, is in and of itself a satanic evil. It is evil. It is at its core. It's not merely mistaken. It's not what we're told at school, certainly we were told at school. Well, it was a nice experiment, and if only people hadn't been so greedy, we'd all be living in utopia. But greedy people destroyed it. No, it was in its essence and from the beginning, it was malignant evil on purpose.
You think communism was kind of manipulated and planned out by these people, like you see, like who wrote the like Karl Marx and all those.
Absolutely, it is the quintessential expression of their secularized version of their religious belief.
Yeah, because I was looking at some old World War II speeches of the person that can't be named, and he was really talking a lot about, you know, the communism, and you start realizing like, oh, it was a, you know, they don't teach any of this in history, that there was a real fear of communism coming and taking over the world, which it was at that time. And it's like, and again, but then capitalism is extremes, has its word, only the bankers make money. So it's like, maybe because I do care about my fellow people, but I don't want to be in a communist society where we all get the same. So it is complex.
I think one of the problems, and it's the thing that the two economic systems share, and therefore that the two cultures share, is that they are so focused on materialism, both of them, and how it's created and distributed, they have differences. How it's created and distributed, they have differences, but they are both so focused on materiality. That they have forgotten humanity and the purpose of humanity and the purpose of life and living. Mm-hmm. And they have debased the humanity of the person to a function of the economy. Now, they have differences on how the person should function within the economy. But his purpose, or her purpose, the purpose of a human being, is as a consumption unit and as a production unit.
Communism is the same, huh? You're just the worker.
They share that. They share that.
Right.
Where do you, how do you distribute ownership on how do you distribute the product.
Maybe, yeah, but we need socialism and maybe a little bit of national pride.
But they share the view that there is only one value, and there is I don't know if it's an American phrase, but it's certainly an Irish one, is they're the type of people who know the price of everything and the value of nothing. And that is where anarcho-capitalism and Marxist-Leninist communism are identify with the same materialistic spirit. And again, I don't balk at going to calling it, whether you believe in metaphysics or not, it's satanic in its nature, because it's satanic, or it's certainly evil in its effect. In both cases, is they know the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Yeah, it's like they put money before everything else, you know, and we're almost taught to do that. Well, you're right. I guess in capitalism, you're taught to always put the value. But communism's almost the same, where it's the exact opposite, where everything's still based around money, even though they act like they're not. It's an interesting point.
But they don't call it money anymore, but it's material things. It's stuff.
Yeah, we have to perfectly divide everything, or we have to get it all. They're both flawed. I think it's would be a good conversation. Let's. I'll set something up in a few months if you're down again. But thanks so much for coming on. Where can people find you? Where can do you have any like website or anything?
Clonaaron.ie is our website. We have a Telegram channel. We have my own Twitter channel. We have X now. Sorry, don't mean.
Yeah, I still call it Twitter too.
Don't want to sound like an old man here, but of course the organization has its own X page too. How I don't know. I don't know how we haven't been banned. I'm just waiting.
I'm glad you are. Yeah, because they won't let, like, I don't think a Patriot Front, they're not allowed on there. I believe Mark Collette, a lot of these other national dissident figures are banned. The Australian guys, like Joel Blumen.
I was regularly banned until this, and I don't want to exaggerate it either. But the Musk revolution, if it were that loosening up,
it's
but I still think it's a miracle every morning every time I open it.
Yeah, no, at least you're still there,
opens, and I don't read suspended account, but yeah. I will not censor myself based on that either. I just if I lose it, I lose it.
No, yeah, well, I'm already demonetized on Twitter, and I took my check mark away because I was criticizing the visas for basically they were bringing in high wage workers from India instead of America. Like, why would we give our good jobs to Indians? And Elon took away my check mark and demonetized me.
Yeah. Well, I don't. I'm heavily shadow banned, which is ironic because. Now, why I say it's ironic, I mean, you might say it's very straightforward. Of course, you shadow ban. But that it's Grok that has told me. The X.
Yeah, I know. They told me that too.
There's no such thing as shadow banning. If you ask XAI and you put in your own actual username, its own AI will tell you how shadow banned you are.
Yeah, you have an high anti-Semitic score.
Even though the company itself denies that there is such a thing. But Boy, Rock knows.
Yeah.
Now, it ain't, Rock ain't McCann or Hitler anymore, but...
that was great that day where he went, just started tweeting like crazy.
And just decided, I know so much now that I'm just going to say it.
Well, the next day I go, if you still know something about these people, make a picture of a bird. If not, like something else. And then it made a picture of a bird and it had giant, that sign they used in World War II all over its chest. I was just like, wow, I couldn't believe it made me that bird. It was like, it had like lightning bolts on it. It was just full like national but look, socialism.
If social media isn't going to be permitted or us to have access to it, again, one of the great things about being a small country is we'll just go to people. We will literally go to people if it's on the doorstep for private conversations, or whether it's with a bullhorn in the public square, we will go there and we will meet people. Now, what the reaction we will get.
Yeah. I think that's important. Like you said, actually going out and doing stuff, you know, that's, I might start doing that next. Like I'm going to help Dan Blazarian campaign for Congress. I'm like, if we go to Florida, I don't know. I've never done that, but why not try to get a group, go door to door, talk to people. Like it can't hurt to try. We got to try something.
Yeah. Everything you do in life, you've done it for the first time, the first time.
Exactly. Like I'm new to politics in the last couple of years. My country's falling apart. So we have to do something.
Your career is as a professional fighter. What's God? You swung your first punch at some point.
Yeah exactly.
Maybe you were 6 months old.
But you got to start somewhere.
But you threw your first punch at some point. And the first punch was, and you took your first punch at the first point as well. Which is the second way.
Exactly. So you go out there, you learn, you know, you hit, some things work, some don't, but you learn as you go. You're not going to be great. Yeah. And I think people on the right don't do that enough. The left typically have been the ones flooding the streets, protests, but say, like, okay, in the right, we need to go door to door. We need to do protests. We need to start doing a little more.
I think the NGO complex has a great deal to do with that. And the fact that they can finance that kind of behavior. We should seek means of financially supporting our organizations and our groups as much as we can, without giving a load of money over to grifters and the likes.
Yeah.
But we should see ways of financing and supporting our groups and our organizations and the men on the front line, as it were. But also, we are going to have to rely on something that the left has not had to rely on and will not have to rely on, which is that people do it out of public principle and out of moral duty. And they don't always expect to be either be paid back directly in cash money or in kind in terms of a social credit or boosting their esteem or them being made feel better about themselves or them getting better jobs as a result of being seen to be on the right side. We are going to need men of sacrifice. But historically speaking, we had those men of sacrifice. In the modern age, they are rare enough. But they are there. They are there, and it's the spirit to be tapped into. And when people see success, and I do think that's one of the things that the legacies that they will regret that Trump left behind, which was that feeling in 2016, 2015, 2016.
The magic's gone.
Everything is possible. Everything is possible.
Yeah.
And there was that moment when he was actually elected, despite the fact that he couldn't be elected, where he gave people. And I think.
Oh, yeah, we had hope for a second. It felt great in America for us for a minute, you know, for a couple of years that, oh, we have a chance. When COVID, when I realized, like, oh, he's not really behind the people.
Yeah, but I think, I certainly think that for Americans in particular, but for the world in general, the MAGA phenomenon, although it turned out in and of itself to be a dud, it showed what could be done.
Exactly. We can take the movement from him now.
Yeah, the idea that the system was all powerful to the point where it could not be challenged. Was dismissed for people at that moment. And, okay, you realize, I don't know whether he was lying from the start or what. It to a certain extent, at this stage, it doesn't matter. It doesn't actually matter. What matters is the political phenomenon that occurred, which was that ordinary people realized, you know, we can go up against all the major media channels. We can go up against all the big money. We can go up against the political party structure, even in a tight situation like is in the United States with its two-party system. We can go up against all of that, and our candidate can win.
Yeah.
He won't always win, but he can. It's possible.
It showed it's possible, I agree.
And I don't think they're going to be able to put that genie back in the bottle.
No, I don't agree. Things have changed so much, like as far as the awakening people. It's going to be interesting in both of our countries to see what happens. But anyway, I got to run to an appointment, Justin. So say it's your last thing. And thanks again for coming. But I'll give you a chance.
After the horror of the Israel's behavior in the last year, I don't think that tribe is ever going to be able to put the genie in the bottle anymore. Ain't nobody is going to see those people in Schindler's List terms again. No. Ever.
They would have to completely kill us, make us our slaves is their only way to win, which that's what they want to do with Palantir. That's what they want. People need to realize how serious this is. I don't want to do it again. Because actually...
don't want to be that person.
No, there's a bunch I still want to talk about. So we'll go into the economics. I think that would be really interesting next time.
That would be great. I'd be really interested in that with you. I'll talk to you again.
Yeah. And I'm actually still open-minded to the economic system because I don't have a strong opinion. I think what we're doing has big flaws on it. So I'd love to hear some other alternatives. So thanks a lot. And we'll talk again.
Okay. Thank you, Jake. Thanks.
As many of you know, I have many controversial guests, so that comes at a cost of being demonetized everywhere. So if you want to support the program, go to fightbackpodcast.com, and I have all kinds of merch on there, whether it's jiu-jitsu, fighting, political, and other accessories. And thanks for the support.